you in the 06010. Hello and welcome into the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Today's podcast is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. Guys, it's Tuesday, August 16th. My name is Daniel Dopp. I'm joined by my best friends in the world.
Wow.
After a night of a fantasy marathon, we're here bright and early again today. We got even more fantasy content for everybody. How you guys doing after the big fantasy marathon?
Well, weirdly, I don't see DeAndre Swift anywhere in the set, so
that'd be
a little bit misleading in terms of economists, your very best friends in the world.
That's all right.
No, how do you guys feel? Everybody's good. We're almost
we're
there.
We're remarkably alert. Well, you know.
It's been a busy morning. I have already lost my wallet. So if anybody here on ESPN campus
finds
wallets, please let me know. I lost my backpack last night. I just dropped my paper. So in 12 hours, I'll either be a disaster or a crowning achievement.
I love it.
I found your wallet. It might be a little short. Got a little hungry earlier. Went out for a nice breakfast. But otherwise, you're good to go. So
yeah,
don't sweat it.
Mike.
That's the fee.
No words.
That's what happens. That's what happens over the fantasy marathon. We're here all night over the fantasy marathon. Back this morning, we have even more marathon for you guys tonight. Even 7 to 10 p.m. We are talking mock draft, a live draft. The four of us: Adam Schefter, Mina Kimes, Anita Marks, Liz, Eric. Who else? Tyler Fulgham. We got everybody. We're gonna have an awesome time. 7 to 10 p.m. on E1.
Damian Woody.
Damian Woody's going to be there. Yep. Absolutely.
ESPN is so confident in my mock drafting ability that I'm not actually a drafter tonight. I'm just overseeing the event. I am the 11th person in. If somebody pulls a hamstring moments before the draft begins, I will be there. I cannot wait.
I actually heard after the draft story you told about how Japin was better than you at fantasy last year. They actually pulled you last minute.
Oh,
somebody else in.
She's
there,
actually on standby now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, she'll be here in studio.
We got to get childcare plans lined up, and that sounds great.
Well, I think we'll just swap you out.
I'll just go be dad for the night.
That works. No big deal.
This just went downhill for you. You just went from a lead role to not even here.
I could sleep.
Define downhill.
Also wouldn't mess up. Yeah.
So let's get into a bunch of stuff because we have so much football to get into. This has been the fun part, right? We talk so much football over the marathon, but there is so much to talk about. I'm going to dive right in. Let's talk strategy. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, we talked about quarterbacks. We talked about tight ends. Listen to that podcast. If you did not go back and listen to it, a lot of fun stuff in there. Liz Loza came on the show. It was her first time. It was great being able to be in studio. But let's talk about some strategy here because one of the things that we do is we talk about rankings, Field. We talk about, Mike, you've got someone ranked at wide receiver 33. Field, you've got him at wide receiver 29. But one of the things that we try really hard to do here is to not just become a victim to ranking specifically, to be able to put people in tiers, in ranking-based tiers. So talk to our listeners about why tier-based ranking is such a valuable way to go about drafting.
Yeah, you kind of hit on some of the conceit, Daniel, but basically the idea is that when you're nitpicking between players that are so closely aligned near each other in their position rankings, you're basically just wasting energy. So when you are considering or constructing your roster, if you're sitting here saying to yourself, I already have two elite lock-it-in wide receivers, whether those two wide receivers are Stephon Diggs and Keenan Allen or Mike Evans and Ja'Marr Chase, I feel pretty comparably about your roster. But I just think that we get so bent out of shape, especially during the preseason, where it's like, dude, you have Keenan Allen behind Mike Evans? Have you thought about that for a second? It's like, yeah, okay, so Keenan Allen's a guarantee to have at least 100 catches. Mike Evans is a guarantee to have at least 10 touchdowns. Keenan Allen might have 2.5 more fantasy points than Mike Evans at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Does that mean that the person who had Keenan over Mike was right and the other person was wrong? No. So I just want people to be sort of mindful of the idea that, sometimes when we're talking about players, we're not making a compelling case for one versus the other. We're kind of clustering them together. So that's always helped me is when I'm going through the draft, when I am looking at an upcoming pick, let's say I'm five picks away, if I can identify four players that I view in a comparable tier, especially when they play at the same position, because that makes it much easier, then I look at the value as kind of similar. I'll take almost any of those four players. Of course, you have to break the tie on the clock, but sometimes it's not worth the energy of just going back and forth, agonizing. Oh my God, do I take Deontay Johnson or do I take, whoever is around wide receiver 15 on your board otherwise? It's pretty much all good.
And I think a good example of that this year is what we've talked about with quarterback, right? Because, I mean, tiers vary, right? Yours is a little different than mine, right? I think you have five in your top tier.
Yeah.
I have three, right? I think it's a big three at the quarterback position. But after that, it's 4 to 12, very similar to me, right? So let's say Joe Burrow comes off the board in the fifth round. and then Aaron Rodgers, who I have in the same tier, is coming off in the 8th or 9th round. Like, why would I force myself to, I got to get him now because Joe Burrow just went, they're all very similar to me. So I'll just wait until 3 rounds later, focus on other positions early on, and get a guy I think is pretty equivalent. That's the value of tiers right there.
Yeah.
The last thing I'll say on it is sometimes before a draft, and it depends on the size of the league, 10-team leagues, I'm not as concerned about this, but if I play in a deeper league, sometimes I'll draw a very arbitrary cutoff line. And I'll say to myself, in a 16-team league, who are the 16 or maybe more quarterbacks or maybe fewer quarterbacks that I'm comfortable with as a starter? Just underline that player and say, everybody above this, I'm good with. I would like to land one of the players in this range. Go to running backs, go to wide receivers, go to tight ends, which is sometimes tricky in a 16-team league, and do the same thing. I know these aren't hacks. These aren't like groundbreaking ideas, but just sort of useful reminders as you get prepared for your fantasy draft, because some people do 20 fantasy drafts, some do one. And if you're one of those people that only does one and you haven't had the time to keep up with everything, it's a worthwhile tip to employ.
Yeah, absolutely. With that being said, though, salary cap drafts are very different than redraft leagues. And a lot of times when we're talking about tier-based rankings, you're talking about a redraft, you know, a snake draft where someone's going to fall down to me, and I think there's good value here. But when you're looking at a salary cap draft, Mike, it doesn't always work out that way because the tiers are different. You're not talking about how far someone falls. It's how much are you willing to spend on someone. So how do you look at that tier-based rankings when you're doing salary cap type drafts?
You have to be willing to adjust on the fly in salary cap drafts. It's just really that simple. It's an art, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So you come out of the gate and people will sometimes overbid on players, frankly. I mean, you have to have values ready to go beforehand to understand if you were getting an early value, because sometimes people think, oh, no, like the first, you know, Jonathan Taylor's here. I have to spend. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of get toward the middle when a bunch of running backs go off, where it kind of lightens a little bit. Maybe then you could sneak in some values. But then you get to the point where you're talking about where you get to the end of a tier, right? And maybe there's only one top 15 running back. Maybe Joe Mixon's the last one left. And there's a lot of teams that want that running back, right? And the bidding just starts going higher and higher and higher. And next thing you know, Christian McCaffrey went for $59 and Joe Mixon went for $54 because everyone's trying to get that last star running back. So you just have to know when to strike. You have to be prepared for your salary cap draft going into it. And I'll tell you what, just kind of general strategy on salary caps, I would say 90 to 94% of your money should be on starters. That's where you put your money. You need like a dollar a bench spot, basically. Maybe you want two or three here or there. Go cheap a quarterback. You can afford to. Most of your money on starters, that's kind of the basics there.
I also think if you structure it like just like a team, you put a cap. You sort of put a cap for yourself of where you're willing to go. Right, a budget. And you say, I would like to spend, even if you want, you know, player X, I am not going to go above this, because when the bidding starts getting out of hand, I actually view that as a positive strategy. Like, yes, let them spend all that money and I'm going to reserve it and be able to maybe split it off elsewhere.
Yeah, price enforcing is fun.
Yeah.
It's salary cap drafts. Like, this guy's too low. I'm going to
bid. Exactly.
He's still under price. If I get him, fine, it's too low, but you cannot let somebody get a steal. Right. You have to enforce the market value, essentially.
Only component that I wanted to add to this: if you have patience, because auction drafts tend to take a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they can be 3 or 4 hours. And if you play, we're East Coast based. I've got a salary cap league where I play with West Coasters. We don't start our draft until like 10 o'clock sometimes, which people who are sitting there laughing and saying, oh, man, Fields staying up till 10 o'clock. I'm that old. All right. So pounding the pavement until like 1 a.m. for me is not always the easiest thing. But if you are able to show some discipline and have the energy to, it's not the worst thing in the world to be the last person in the draft room. Yeah. Because there are always, always going to be players that are going so far below what the auction or the suggested tag would be on the cheat sheet. You're going to find players for a dollar. If you have the last 5 players to grab, there are going to be more players left over than there is money left over. You're going to end up getting some tremendous values. It's just a matter of whether you can, A, be disciplined to not spend all your cash first, and B, have the patience to grind it out.
Yeah.
Plus, throw some kickers up early, because someone will be like, Justin Tucker, I got to get him up to $2.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. They're not thinking, I need this money later. I love that. Whenever someone
could come into play,
ups a bid on a kicker or a defense, my favorite thing.
Yeah, well, yes, and I started to do this again, but I always, like, I have players, like DK Metcalf is a player that in a certain scenario I would draft, right, if he falls far enough. But this year I'm not paying the premium DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
He might be one of the first players that I offer up for the rest of the league to bid on.
Correct.
Because I know that somebody else is going to jump on the opportunity to collect DK Metcalf.
Totally. So, Fanya, I'm going to start with you and then come to Mike on this. But one of the things that we do is we look at how much injury risk we want to take on while drafting. And there's a big difference between taking on that injury risk early in the draft, the first couple rounds, versus taking on the injury risk later on in the draft. How is it that you manage when you're drafting, breaking down injured players and understanding this guy is worth taking early, understanding everything that comes with that?
Well, I tend to be fairly conservative, as anyone who's drafted with me knows, right? So if I anticipate that a player is still working their way back and may or may not, if we don't have a clarity on whether a player is going to start the season on time, then the value drops, you know? And so to give an example, you know, last year when we were talking about Saquon, I was very concerned. I know. Sorry, Mike. We'll have a moment for Mike. Okay. I was just concerned about whether he'd start this, when he would start the season, and how involved he would be. So it's not just, again, when they get out there on the field. It's what are they able to do, mm-hmm. and how much utilization do you expect them to get, and really, what do you expect them to accomplish over the course of a season? So to me, that value, you know, the price that I would pay in an auction draft or where I would take him in a snake draft went way down. When we're talking about Chris Godwin, who I think is a player that's going to fit that bill this year, it's a tough call because he looks really good. He's not on the PUP list, so there's the possibility that he's available for week one. But we don't exactly know what kind of utilization he will get early and how that will progress. This is where watching the details of what players are doing in camp and daily notes from the writers who cover them, our NFL Nation reporters, on what their involvement is, can give you a big advantage when you go into the draft because you're getting information on how their progression is working towards performance. If you think that somebody like Chris Godwin is going to serve you well in the back half of the season, which is sort of what I think about him, then I would be looking at the value draft because some people are going to be nervous. They're going to stay away. And he could be an excellent value for you as long as you understand maybe you're not getting it week one, mm-hmm. two, or three.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think it varies by player and when they're on, you know, what their ADP is, right? So what I like to think about is comparing the upside to, you know, obviously the concerns with the injury. So, for example, Saquon Barkley last season, I thought, okay, yeah, I mean, definite concerns. You raised them, totally fair. I thought, but what if? You know, what if he's out there and he's playing 80% of the snaps, right? So that's the way I looked at it. It didn't go right for me last season. But I look at this year, you know, Chris Godwin, Michael Gallup, even in deeper leagues, Jameson Williams, right? Guys who I feel like when they're on the field at some point this season, maybe not early on, and especially if you have an IR slot, right, it could be an advantage for you. At some point, they could be league-winning players. However, other guys like Rob Tonyan, Logan Thomas, Rashad Penny, Robert Woods, Julio Jones, Raheem Mostert. I don't necessarily see, you know, comparing ADP to their potential output, enough of a ceiling to really go out of my way to stash them on my roster, right? I just, if they're going to cap out as a fringe starter, it's just something that I'm not really interested in my draft. So just I'm looking for upside with those kind of
really
guys.
Quick, what I would say, just two players you mentioned. Chris Godwin clearly is moving towards return to play. Mm-hmm. Jameson Williams may not play much, if at all.
Right.
So, again, just really check where they are in their
right.
progression.
And he's also, I mean, you can get him super late, right? Right. Jameson's super late, throw him on IR, and maybe sits half the season and is a league winner in the fantasy playoffs, right?
I'm not, like, the best at graphs and math and stuff, so I'm trying to draw
what a bar graph. Calling us a
what
loser?
Like a curve? No. Yeah, I'm calling myself a loser. pretty simple for me. These are all really good nuanced thoughts, but as far as injury risk is concerned, to me, it's pretty clear, pretty cut and dry, right? Early in the draft, injury risk is higher for you. Later in the draft, 5, 6, 7, 8 rounds, I'll swing for the fences, no problem there. I would prefer not to have my first and second round picks be guys coming off of significant injuries where we don't know exactly what the outlook is, but I keep sort of pounding the table for Chris Godwin because where he's going right now, I don't care if Chris Godwin is not a super duper star this year. He's like a 24th wide receiver off the board. You could get him in like the late 5th, early 6th, 7th, depending on what draft you're in.
Yep.
And if he plays anywhere close to expectations, he could be a top 10 wide receiver again.
And like same thing with J.K. Dobbins. It's the same way I feel. 5th round for a guy that's that talented, a super athlete, frankly, in an offense that is been great in terms of running back production on the ground, high scoring offense. So same thing. That's why I'm going after Dobbins in the fifth round.
We got to move on, but I want to say this. One of the things I've been trying really hard to be cognizant of is to not load up on just injured value. J.K. Dobbins, Robert Woods, Michael Gallup. There's a lot of guys you can get late that would be really good value, but then half your team isn't starting until the second half of the season. So you got to make sure that you're paying attention to that.
Yeah, it's week one and you're like, oh my goodness, I have no starting players.
I starting, yes. All right. Mike, when it comes to strength of schedule, that's something that you talk about a fair amount. You go through and have a whole strength of schedule set up. Mm-hmm. Do you use that as a tiebreaker when you're drafting? Is it more than a tiebreaker? Does it not mean anything?
So it's all baked into the projections already. So if you're looking at our season-long projections on the site and you look at a team like, say, Pittsburgh, who I have with the hardest projected fantasy schedule, their numbers are a little lower than if they were on the other end and
you
had a lighter schedule.
You do that for us personally.
I do that for you.
That's so
specifically
nice,
for you, Daniel.
Thank
just
you,
to
buddy.
Help you out. You know, I know you were concerned.
I need it.
So,
yeah.
But that is all baked in, and certainly it's something I would think about if I'm looking for sleepers, right? So an example I've used a lot this offseason is Jacksonville, right? Mm-hmm. Very light schedule, a lot kind of going right for them in terms of coaching, improved personnel, and, of course, nobody wants them. Super cheap in drafts. Christian Kirk, Trevor Lawrence stack. Love it. Why not? What if Trevor Lawrence makes that leap that so many second-year quarterbacks have made? Christian Kirk, one of the highest-paid receivers in the NFL, has a chance to go off. He could do it with Evan Ingram, especially if you're in like a tournament setting, a best ball sort of tournament out there, like that sort of stack there with like a Lawrence, a Kirk, and an Ingram.
Yeah.
ETN you could work in. You can have a lot of fun with something like that. So that's a time where I would look at strength of schedule. And, yes, to answer your question, it can break ties sometimes as well.
Sure, sure. All right. Let's move on to some positional values. We're going to talk about wide receiver after talking about running backs, after talking about quarterbacks and tight ends yesterday. Mm-hmm. Guys, there is a top tier of wide receivers that is currently going in the first round. Mm-hmm. Right now, Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, all three of them finished inside the top 10. But we've talked about this year whether or not you're taking wide receivers in the first round based on what you want to get from running backs. And Field, I want to know what you think about taking these three wide receivers. Do you think that all three of them, Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase,
yep,
that they are all being worth being drafted inside the top 10 still this year?
Yeah, all top 10 players on my board, my big board, regardless of position. And we can give you every single number available, or we could just start with this very simple conceit. They're all incredible. They're incredible wide receivers. You could make the case that Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase could be the faces of this league for the next 10 years. They're that good. They're that prodigious. Justin Jefferson has more receiving yards than any player for the first 2 years of his career in NFL history.
That's pretty good.
Ja'Marr Chase broke the rookie receiving record last season. These guys are going to be rewriting the record book. So, of course, you have confidence in them going forward. They are the top two players in Dynasty. I don't know if Mike Clay's ranks align with that, but
I believe they're 1-2. Jonathan Taylor's there, too.
Yeah, so I sort of the three-man tier is those two plus Jonathan Taylor. For specific for this season, like, we don't have to overthink this too much. Their production on the whole can come down a little bit in terms of yardage and touchdowns, and they could still be worth this pick. The only thing I'm keeping an eye on between Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, and Ja'Marr Chase is just whether or not Ja'Marr Chase's consistency stabilizes a little bit this year. There was a little bit of a slump in the middle of last season after a red-hot start. And while Cooper Kupp had 11 games with 10 or more targets and Justin Jefferson had 7 games with 10 or more targets, Ja'Marr Chase only had 2 with 10 or more targets. So that might be the way to break the tie between these three in terms of 1, 2, and 3 if you have to make the decision during your draft order. But back to the tiers conversation, I have them in that elite wide receiver tier.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair. Absolutely. Cooper Kupp had 96 more fantasy points than any other receiver.
96?
How crazy is that?
Talking last night on the show about how Josh Allen has this notable gap between all of their quarterbacks over the past two seasons. It was 63 points. Yeah. Cooper Kupp had 96 more last year alone.
That's
absurd.
Crazy.
Completely That's... absurd. So, Ben, by the way, if Cooper Kupp doesn't repeat last season, and there's a lot of reasons to believe that anybody would not repeat a truly historic season in back-to-back years, that's why it's historic in the first place, still fine.
Right.
He could drop by 17% of his points last year and still be the number one wide receiver, or still would have been the number one scoring wide out in fantasy.
Did you just do that math on the fly? Is that like 96 plus 17%?
I threw in a percentage.
Not trying to make Mike jealous. We're Stefania, the Princeton Brainiac over here, but me and Full Sail have been working on our math.
I was thinking 16.8%. I would have liked a decimal.
You are a decimal kind of guy.
Yeah. Now I feel
nothing's ever good enough. All right.
Never.
You know who doesn't make that list?
I know who's just below the list.
Davante Adams, Stefania. Yeah.
And Debo. I thought you were just going to throw that at me, just a zinger.
I didn't want to do that to you. Okay. Mike did that to me last night when we were doing the Jalen Hurts DFS segment. We just keep talking about how Jalen Hurts against the Lions week one. I'm not going to do that to you.
Oh, thank you.
But Davante Adams changes teams this year. Now in a spot where with Derek Carr, he has a whole bunch of other pass catchers around him. Hunter Renfrow was a top 20 wide receiver last year. Darren Waller, still incredible. When you look at Davante Adams, how does his value take a hit this year based on last year with Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I just think there's uncertainty when you're making that many switches. You know, I don't think there's a question about the talent. Davante Adams, by and large, has stayed healthy. We know that he's got a connection with Derek Carr. I mean, it's part of the reason that he went there. But there's still uncertainty. There's an offensive line that is questionable. I almost said Oakland, in Las Vegas, you know, and you just don't know what the scheme's going to look like. A whole new coaching regime and personnel that Derek Carr is adjusting to as well. So I think all that uncertainty is sort of factoring into why Davante Adams falls out of that first tier.
Yeah, agreed. That's fair. And Field, Tyreek Hill also falls out of that tier, moving from Kansas City to Miami with Tua. How do you feel about Tyreek so far this year?
So, how do I feel about him? I feel about him like he feels about Tua, which is like it's easy for me to say really nice things. I'm not sure I actually mean them, right?
Sure, that's
Tyreek Hill's an incredible player. 111 catches last year. The guy is consistently one of the most explosive downfield players in the NFL. There are ways for him to come close to his production in Kansas City. Here are the ways in which I am concerned for Tyreek Hill. One is that you have Tua as your quarterback as opposed to Patrick Mahomes. I'm not overthinking this, right? Patrick Mahomes, one of the best we've ever seen. Tua, a guy that still has some questions that he has to answer in his career. The other thing that I'm keeping an eye on for Tyreek Hill is things were about as rosy and peachy as they could be for the Kansas City Chiefs over the past five seasons with Patrick Mahomes. Four straight AFC championship games. Never, ever, ever could you complain about basically anything that was taking place in the offense. Gets traded to Miami, immediately makes some comments, basically calling out his role in Kansas City and talks about how things could be a little bit different. What if it's not like that in Miami? Mm-hmm. What if things aren't hunky-dory every single week? And by the way, Caesar's win totals, Mike Clay's projections, my own instincts tell me that it might not be like what it was in Kansas City. Does that mean that I'm not drafting Tyreek Hill? No, of course not. But when you're wondering why he's dropped from maybe wide receiver 2 or 3 in our preseason rankings to wide receiver 8, those are some of the factors that contribute for me.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he was already boom bust last season, right? I've talked about this before. Had 5 top 10 fantasy weeks, had 8 finishes of 40th or worse, and that was in that Chiefs offense. But I will say this in his defense. This is why we're not dropping him to like 20th, right? Last season, the one thing that did not go great for Kansas City was everyone was like, all right, we're done. We're playing cover two, like every pass play.
Deepest of cover two.
And Tyreek Hill had a career high in targets and receptions, right? He adjusted, found ways to get the ball in his hands, and he had a very good season. We would expect Miami to try to do that as well, right? I mean, maybe Tua is more accurate than Patrick Mahomes, maybe not quite as good of a playmaker, but if he finds a way to not throw the ball on the ground and just get it to Tyreek, get it to Jalen Waddle, They can score some points offensively.
So we've got those two wide receivers, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, both who have been elite fantasy options, Mike. But you have someone that just came to your team in A.J. Brown, who I desperately want to be an elite fantasy wide receiver, has not been given the volume. How do you feel about A.J. Brown in the trade this year?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about him. But again, I think that his ceiling is probably going to be a little bit capped, right? I think he's going to be a borderline wide receiver one. And the reason for that is the same problem he had in Tennessee, which is too much running, right?
Yeah.
The Eagles are going to be more balanced this season, not quite as run heavy as they were with that easy schedule in the second half last season. But at the same time, you still have Jalen Hurts, who is a scrambling quarterback, right? And they're going to at least try balance. Hurts is going to be scrambling a lot. It's going to limit the volume for A.J. Brown. So he's a really good player. He's going to score touchdowns. There's a lot to like. But again, you just think about the ceiling compared to these other guys. I think it's a little lower.
Yeah, averaging just under 62 catches for his career as well, right? So it's a volume game. And I get it. Part of that is because of the offense he played in. But Mike just alluded to the fact that it's kind of a facsimile.
Yeah.
Availability hasn't been a massive issue for A.J. Brown. He's missed just a total of 6 games in his 3 seasons, but he has been banged up from time to time, so you constantly see us asking Stefania, is he going to play or is he not? We all love A.J. Brown. Again, one of the best players in the NFL, handsomely paid as such. But that's the reason why, again, he's not in that top five or six wide receiver conversation, which in a different offense, he very well might be.
That's fair. You know who I miss asking Stefania about? Alshon Jeffrey. You know anything on Alshon Jeffrey, Stefania?
Alshon was a fan favorite, right?
Really, I mean,
every week we had Alshon Jeffrey
we
questions.
We talked about Alshon. Yeah.
Alshon Jeffrey's probably smoking a cigar on a yacht.
Yeah,
that's right.
I mean, a ton of money,
won a Super Bowl, like, right?
Life is good, definitely his.
That's right. All right, these wide receiver comparisons are presented by NerdWallet. Are you on the fence over which credit card to get? With NerdWallet side-by-side comparisons to top credit cards, you don't have to be. NerdWallet, the smartest decision for all your financial decisions. And guys, we have a lot of offenses that supported two top 20 fantasy wide receivers last year. And I'm wanting to know from Mike, I'm going to start with you, the Bengals, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. Are they going to produce two top 20 fantasy wide receivers again this year? Is there a repeat?
Two top 20. They might have two top 10. It's possible. If an offense is going to do it, it's going to be the Bengals. I actually have Chase ranked third, Higgins ranked 10th. So I think they can pull it off for sure. Obviously, Jamar Chase was fantastic last season as the number five finisher, but he was 18th in targets. You know, kind of to Fields' point earlier, there's room for growth in the target department for Jamar Chase. And then T. Higgins last season, he missed three games, still had 74 catches, almost 1,100 yards, and six touchdowns. And check this out. The target shares for the big three receivers for the Bengals when all three guys were active, 24% for Chase, 23% for T. Higgins right behind him, 16% for Tyler Boyd, which is obviously a concern if they're all out in the field. But those top two guys can certainly be top 10.
And let's not forget the fact that T. Higgins down the stretch was just as good as Jamar Chase, if not better. From weeks 12 through 18, Jamar Chase played a total of seven games, 49 targets, 34 catches, 588 yards. T. Higgins, in six games, had more targets, 51 to 49, more catches, 37 to 34, 645 yards to 588 yards. Of course, we still have Jamar Chase ranked much higher because he's such a difference maker after the catch and has much more touchdown upside than basically like any wide receiver in the league. But it's not crazy to have T. Higgins inside your top 12. If he was your top receiver on your roster coming out of your draft, you have reason to be excited. One of the reasons why I love this Bengals offense is, and maybe this changes a little bit with the addition of Hayden Hurst, but for the most part, it was a pretty predictable offense week over week. We know those three receivers that Mike alluded to were going to get the vast majority of the work, some Joe Mixon mixed in, not a ton though, and then a sprinkling of last year CJ Uzama, now Hayden Hurst. Very predictable offense week over week.
Heck yeah. All right, so finally, let's talk about the Buccaneers, where we have both Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. You already alluded to Chris Godwin earlier. Do you think that this is an offense that can return two top 20 fantasy wide receivers?
Well, it'll be interesting. I think part of the answer lies in how Chris Godwin's progression goes. You know, last year he was on pace for a career year. And in fact, the rumblings that we heard was that Chris Godwin was becoming Tom Brady's favorite target. He was the preferred target. Mike Evans, the touchdown maker. Chris Godwin, the preferred target. In fact, Chris Godwin, career highs in catches and targets last year. Evans, 27 touchdowns over the last two seasons. Both of them pretty predictable in terms of where Tom Brady's looking to deliver the football. But I think that could be different in the early part of the season. So last year, they were the only wide receiver pair that averaged over 16 points per game. I don't know that will stay the same consistent. Like, I think what will happen is we're going to start by seeing a lot of Evans, who's currently dealing with a little hamstring issue. That's been a bugaboo for Evans and kind of intermittently over the last few years.
Sure.
So hopefully he's healthy and can handle the workload that's going to be thrust a little bit. I think there's going to be more attention thrust upon him early on because defenses can afford to do that. But I think as the season rises, then that will become interesting, right? Because people won't really know what to do, and Chris Godwin can start becoming more of that preferred target.
Yeah, and added Russell Gage and Julio Jones this offseason, so they're going to factor in early.
I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth here for a second, but Mike Evans, an incredible player with a remarkable run of consistency. It is worth noting, though, despite the fact that he is the only player ever with seven straight 1,000-yard seasons to begin his career and being a darn good bet to finish with 10 touchdowns, you sort of ride the wave a bit more with Mike Evans during a season than you do with Chris Godwin at full health, which is why, to say it again, I'm optimistic on Chris Godwin. I know that he's coming off of an ACL tear, and we'll have to closely monitor just how much he is working as we get closer to the first week of the regular season. But if he's close to healthy, or if he's healthy by September 25th, week 4, and I had to pick any Bucs receiver the rest of the way, It's clearly Chris Godwin based off everything we've seen between he and Tom Brady in their two seasons together.
Yeah, Evan's very touchdown dependent. Makes me a little nervous, too. Outside the top 20 in targets, catches, and yards last season. So if he has some bad touchdown luck, which happens, that has nothing to do with talent. Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
The ball is just off a little bit. It sails through the back of the end zone. Happens to some of the best players of all time. If that happens to him, he's really going to underwhelm in fantasy.
He will never let you down at the end of the year when you look at season-long scores. Not only has he had tremendous touchdown production and the 1,000 receiving yards, generally speaking, a pretty durable guy, has played, you know, has had hamstring issues, but has still found a way back on the field, usually sooner than expected. But Chris Godwin, clearly, when healthy, is the Bucs wide receiver that has vastly more upside than anybody else week to week.
I think the thing, and I would just want to emphasize this, and you guys have heard me say it a lot, but I just want to repeat it. It's like Chris Godwin, I will appear fully healthy, I think fairly early on. But there's a phase where guys are playing and they look fine and they're not listed as injured, but they're still not quite the same. They're a step slower. They're not quite as confident. The way they plant their leg is a little bit different. That tends to be a little bit softer. They don't make hard cuts. Things that can affect route running and timing and confidence and going up to get the ball. All of that, which is part of what makes Chris Godwin such a good receiver. And can he get there? I absolutely think so. But even if he's playing and playing full games, I don't know that he'll return. I think it's a little bit unfair for us to expect him to be the guy he was last year immediately when he starts playing.
So I'm with you on this, and I think that this is, I don't want to say it's a direct comparison, but when you talk about consistency and that boom or bust nature, the Chargers sort of live in that same vein. Mike Williams is not Mike Evans, right? But Keenan Allen and Mike Williams were wide receiver 11 and 12 last year, and they took very different paths to get their field. Is this another offense where you think both of these guys – oh, don't forget, Josh Palmer is potentially coming on.
Let's go.
But can both of those guys, and Williams and Evan, or Allen and Williams, be able to finish top 20 this year?
I know Mike has mentioned Keenan Allen's age a little bit in recent conversations, but other than that, I can't find a single mitigating factor for his fantasy outlook for this year. Remarkably durable since early in his career, dealt with a little bit of injury, has basically been on the field. He's good for almost 100 catches and 1,000 receiving yards every single season. I guess the only mitigating factor beyond the age is the fact that his touchdown upside has not been there. He has never reached 10 receiving touchdowns in a single season, but that's also why he's not wide receiver 5 in terms of our ranks or in terms of ADP. Where you're getting him, wide receiver 9 or perhaps a little bit lower, to me, one of the safest values in fantasy football this season. An incredible player, an awesome route runner, has one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. They're going to have to throw it a ton. Heck, they're prone to throw it a ton because of the way that they run that offense. I'm not sure what else needs to be said about Keenan Allen. And then Mike Williams, Mike, I think it really just comes down to whether you believe that the first half of last year was a sign of things to come, or if it was just the best case scenario of what has long been Mike Williams, which is Jekyll and Hyde.
Exactly. And I think that's what we're going to get this year, right? I mean, it's going to be a bit boom bust. You have the short range and intermediate targets in Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler, who will be more consistent from a fantasy perspective. Mike Williams will be a little bit boom bust, right? Some weeks you're going to get the 52-yard touchdown. Some weeks you're not. But when all is said and done, I think he'll finish top 15 or so. And a big reason for that is Justin Herbert, a pass-heavy, high-scoring Chargers offense. He's a big part of it. They paid him in the offseason for a reason. So not too worried about him. Again, it's going to be a little up and down. He'll win you some weeks. He might cost you a little other weeks. But, again, when all is said and done, he's going to turn out to be a good wide receiver too.
Maybe I'll regret saying this, but if Mike Williams comes blazing out of the gates again this year, might be a player that I would be, if I roster him, be willing to make a sell-high move on him just because history tells us that he's bound to sort of fade back to where he has been for the first 5 years of his career.
We got one more offense that I think has a potential to have two top 20 wide receivers, and that's the Broncos with Russell Wilson coming over. You look at Cortland Sutton, you look at Jerry Jeudy. Right now they're being drafted lower than that, right? They're not being drafted as top 20 wide receivers. Jerry Jeudy actually just hit wide receiver 20. Cortland Sutton, wide receiver 22. Mike, do you see them? I feel like this is the least comfortable team out of the ones that we're talking about to say, yeah, these two guys can definitely get inside the top 20 with all the things going on.
Yeah, I mean, because we kind of proven guys in the other ones, right? Whereas this team just did not have good quarterback play for years. Although Cortland Sutton does have a top 20 season on his resume. But, I mean, the Russell Wilson factor is so huge here. I mean, you look at Seattle. The last two seasons, they had two top 20 fantasy receivers both years, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, of course. Denver, over the last two seasons, has had zero top 40 fantasy receivers. Zero top 40. It's obviously a huge difference getting Russell Wilson here. I think Jerry Jeudy's in for a big year. His target share has been okay, but he only has three career touchdowns. That is a quarterback problem. It's going to change this season. So I'm optimistic about him. And, of course, we've seen it from Courtland Sutton. More of a vertical target, at a target near the goal line. There's a lot of similarities, frankly, between what Wilson had with Lockett and Metcalf. It fits, right? It fits. And, of course, we hate to see Tim Patrick out for the season, but it does open up perhaps an extra target here or there for those top receivers as well. Lots of like, yes, they both can finish top 20.
Jeff Legwald, who covers the Broncos for us, dove deep into this question. There's a new piece that's available on ESPN.com for our NFL Nation reporters, who did an incredible job, as Stefania referenced earlier the show. Leggy, one of the greatest.
Yeah.
I know what kind of player I thought Jerry Jeudy was coming out of college, because he had an awesome career at Alabama. Through two seasons, due to injury and poor quarterback play, I'm looking forward to recalibrating what kind of player is going to be at his apex in the NFL. Courtland Sutton, we have a better feel for, as Mike mentioned, one of the best vertical threats in the NFL. Led all players in air yards per target last year. And it was like a pretty sizable gap between him and number two, who was Tyler Lockett, incidentally. He is a really, really good vertical threat, is Courtland Sutton. And I made this point before. The best quarterback he's ever played with in his career was Denver Joe Flacco. Not like top of his game, Baltimore Joe Flacco.
Elite Joe
Flacco.
He has
had, Flacco's always elite, but he has had a very uninspiring group of quarterbacks playing with him, and this dates before his NFL career as well. Goes to college during his time at SMU, so he has a breakout potential. Just generally speaking, when you're a vertical threat guy, you're more of a, things could be great one week. You could have the 7 for 150 and two touchdowns, and it might be offset with the occasional 2 for 42 and no touchdowns.
He's one more year removed from injury, too.
Yeah.
Like, I love that for Courtland Sutton, because he actually looked pretty good, then struggled a little bit, as guys often do, but he came back fairly solid. And now, the second year, when the metrics always show that one more year removed from ACL, MCL, these guys do much better, I think he could be in for a big year.
It's interesting. The difference in opinion on like CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy as they go into the third year, right? They have almost identical target shares during weeks they've been active far
crazy
in the league, right?
Yeah.
And I think the big difference is, of course, Dak Prescott versus
whoever.
Flacco, Locke, Bridgewater, Brett Rippin, I think, throw some passes, So
Kendall Hinton, throw a little respect on
Kendall Hinton. Oh, my goodness. Wow. I forgot about that.
About
wow.
That, jeez. Yeah. That was that
current
was
wide receiver.
Did he block you on Twitter, too?
Jeez. Yeah, apparently. I know, right?
That's tough.
But anyway, I think it changes for Jeudy this year.
I like Jeudy. I think Jeudy can definitely take my fantasy team higher. I am accepting him with arms wide open.
Thank you for finishing that off.
Call back to last night.
We talked about these teams. Usually when we look at this, I'm going to talk about stacking. When you talk about stacking, usually it's more of a best ball or a DFS conversation, because you're specifically looking at correlation within that week or whatever it is that you're trying to do. But with these teams, it might be different, because you could roster two of these wide receivers from the same team and still come out from a totally fine perspective. Are you targeting two wide receivers from teams like this? Are you avoiding, let's say, Mike Williams falls to you after you've already drafted Keenan Allen? Are you avoiding him because of that, or are you okay with taking someone because wide receiver 15 is wide receiver 15? Doesn't matter what team they play for.
Nope, it feels gross. It feels kind of like
gross.
It feels almost like if you go as you're a running back on your team, it could work out for you if you manage your team throughout the season, but it doesn't feel good after the draft, right? And I don't feel great about having two star players like this, certainly from the first few rounds. Now, look, if it's, say, Terry McLaurin in the fourth round, and then I take Jahan Dotson late, different story, right? But if I'm taking Evans and Godwin, and then something happens to Tom Brady, the season's over. I mean, I'm done, right? Whereas if you lose one receiver, if you built a good team and you worked waivers, you're going to be able to survive. In this situation, though, that would be tough, and I don't want to be all in season long, where you just, you have to be in the upper half of the league basically to make the playoffs. It's different in a tournament setting, like in best ball, like we were talking about.
Only thing I'll say is that if you are going to double down or double dip onto two wide receivers from the same team, I'd much prefer the guys we were just talking about because of the quarterbacks we play with.
Yes.
Than like a Jalen Waddle and a Tyreek Hill, because there are still questions surrounding Tua Tagovailoa. Brady and Burrow and Herbert and Russell Wilson, like, the best case scenario is truly elite.
Yeah, totally. All right, this insurance receiver question is brought to you by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways that you could save. Are there any insurance wide receivers? Usually we talk about insurance running backs, but in such a pass-heavy league, Stefania, I'll start with you. Are there any insurance wide receivers that you're looking at later on in drafts?
Well, I mean, the giveaway is Josh Palmer because we brought it up already.
It's my guy.
I know.
It's my guy. I said it first.
No, it's my guy. I want him.
It's the one we've been talking about because he has such an obvious path. I mean, I think that's the problem, right, is that when you get past the elite receivers, you're like, who else is going to be there and pick up the slack? And a lot of that, especially on teams who've drafted rookie wide receivers, it shakes out over the course of training camp. You know, or you see that somebody has an injury and then somebody elevates. But a lot of times there's a rotation. Look at Tampa Bay. Let's start with Tampa Bay as an example.
Yeah.
Who's your insurance there? You don't, right?
Julio like who, Jones,
right,
I mean,
right.
Russell
but,
Gage.
Right. That's the point. You don't have a clear insurance receiver. So to me, I don't have somebody that I'm targeting specifically as insurance outside of somebody who has a very clear path because they're coming on strong.
I'll say this. If I draft Justin Jefferson early, I love trying to grab KJ Osborne late. I think he's somebody that I'm into.
Yeah, I'll throw out a guy who has been really hyped up in the past week or so, George Pickens, second-round pick by Pittsburgh. And you could basically just
– he's free.
You can – he's yeah, exactly. Super cheap in drafts, but also you could just say, look at Pittsburgh's resume at wide receiver, just drafting receivers. They know what they're doing. They always hit. And, you know, Deontay Johnson's a sure thing. We know that. Chase Claypool still kind of up in the air, you know, what he's going to ascend to. George Pickens, you know, the ceiling's very high, and by all indications – it looks like he's a future star, so he's a guy you could definitely look at. A
couple more, Terrace Marshall Jr. from the Panthers, really talented guy, second-round pick last year out of LSU. I know that we just talked about how you got to be careful in terms of double-dipping on these Dolphins receivers, but Cedric Wilson got real money, could potentially have a role in Miami if something happened to one of those two guys. Tyler Boyd's kind of a forgotten player in Cincinnati. We talked about him earlier. If one of the two guys is not available, Chase or Higgins, he's going to have a big role. And then deep cut, this is a Mike Clay special play in a deeper league. No DeAndre Hopkins for the first 6 weeks of the season. Hollywood Brown will be very busy. Antoine Wesley played a very DeAndre Hopkins-like role last year. I think it was like 100% of the snaps, Mike, when D-Hop was out. Deep league consideration only. He's currently banged up. But if you're looking for that name that literally nobody else in your league will draft and you're going to use a late 16th round pick in a 16-team league, Antoine Wesley, come on down.
By the way, whatever's left of the Chiefs and Packers receivers, right?
Excellent point.
Because they basically have like four guys competing for those three spots, and you just have one on your bench, and at some point if someone goes down, that fourth guy could potentially jump up. And there's going to be guys from them groups that are cut after week one or two when they're not playing the snaps to some of the starters. Those are the kind of high-ceiling guys you want on your bench.
All right, last two questions for the wide receiver position. Mike, I'm going to get a sleeper from you and a bust from you, Field. Who do you like as a sleeper this year, Mike?
Yeah, my sleeper in our column, actually, on the site, our sleepers, busts, and breakouts, is Drake London, right? First wide receiver pick this year. He's still too cheap in drafts. I've talked about this a lot. A top 10 wide receiver see a lot of volume, and they're very productive in fantasy. This is like a decade-long streak now. These first-year receivers, if they don't get injured, they produce in fantasy. They've pretty much all been top 30. Drake London, a little undervalued even in that Atlanta offense, so I'm getting him as much as
I can.
Any
worries? Doesn't play any more in the preseason.
Yeah, I hope not.
I know. It appears to be nothing serious, but you know.
Field, do you have a bust at the wide receiver position this year?
I do. I've talked about it before, but I'm going to double down on this one. It's DK Metcalf, a player that I'm having a hard time justifying at cost right now. I think that there is a serious risk in using the data from last year's three starts of Geno Smith to say like, oh, it was actually really good for DK Metcalf. Look a little bit closer. It still was an incredible volume, and DK Metcalf had some incredible touchdown production during those games. But last season, zero games with seven or more catches for DK Metcalf. Didn't have a game with 100 yards last season. DK Metcalf is a great touchdown scorer, and he is an amazing player. Again, this has very little to do with DK Metcalf. It actually has zero to do with DK Metcalf here. The quarterback play is as uninspiring as there is in the NFL this season. Mm-hmm. A team that even if they're trailing will find a way to run the football because it's Pete Carroll. And if you look at the career starts for Geno Smith and Drew Lock, I will reiterate this stat. They have combined to start 55 games. In those 55 games, the two of them have pulled together a total of 5 300-yard passing efforts and 5 games with 3 or more passing touchdowns. This passing offense could average 185 yards per game this year. There simply is not enough upside for me with DK Metcalf relative to where he is going. And what I expect, not from DK, make that very clear, not from you, DK, you're a star. Your quarterback's not a star.
I love the way that you put that, though, because you're saying, even as a part of this bust conversation, you're not saying, I'm just out on DK Metcalf this year at cost. Where he is going right now, I am not taking him. But guess what? If he falls, he's still DK Metcalf. there's still value potentially to be had there based on how far he falls down.
I've got him at wide receiver 24, 23. He's going at wide receiver 18, so I'm five slots apart right now.
Yeah. He was very clear, though, that it's not about the player, right? You're like, are you intimidated by DK Metcalf?
Is that what it is?
Have you seen DK Metcalf?
I have. Yes.
Yeah. I'm not worried about DK Metcalf blocking me on Twitter. I'm worried about him blocking me.
In real life, yeah.
Like, just coming up and just blocking me into, like, submission. I will be blocked from Connecticut to Rhode Island if DK Metcalf even put his hands on me.
All right, we found out last night that Mike makes roughly $1.3 million.
Is that right?
Per week.
No, yeah. I'll
gotta pay some bills here, Mike. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Geico?
Yeah, I will. And Geico has a question for you, actually.
For me specifically?
Yes, it's for you. Yeah. How would you love a chance to save money on insurance?
I have been waiting for you to ask me that.
All right, well, here we go. Of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance, for all the things in your life, Geico can help, like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with your homeowner's, condo, or renter's coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. With great rates and discounts, it's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save.
When it comes to choosing their top running back, wide receiver, quarterback, or even which defense is right for your team on any given week, you know where to turn. But when you're trying to decide on the right credit card for your wallet, the right mortgage lender for your dream home, or the right savings account, where do you go? The nerds at NerdWallet are here to help you make a smart financial decision. NerdWallet is a personal finance site run by money nerds. Think people that are as obsessed about personal finance as we are about fantasy sports, and they want to share their knowledge with our listeners to help them find the right financial products for them. Let's say you're looking for a new rewards credit card. NerdWallet can help you compare cashback cards side by side so you can feel confident choosing the one that suits your spending. Think of them like your weekly wide receiver PPR rankings, but you're comparing top credit cards that work for you. NerdWallet, the smartest decision for all your financial decisions.
All right. I can't believe this happened. We're going to talk about tight ends.
Okay.
And I am field. I know that you feel very strongly about this.
Yeah.
But Mark Andrews is currently the consensus tight end one on the board. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Throwing a little bit of shade on Travis Kelce. Right.
Okay.
Is that a problem?
Let's start. For those that maybe are watching the live stream and missed the beginning portion of the show, this is a tears conversation. If Mike wants to make a case for Mark Andrews as the number one tight end in football, he could probably do so until the end of the month. And if you told me to do the exact same thing, I could keep going until the end of August on Travis Kelce. If Mike wants Mark Andrews ahead of him, fine. I like Travis Kelce because I have a larger sample size of him being elite, and because Tyreek Hill's departure probably creates even more opportunity for Kelce, and I'm sure Mike has a very compelling case for Mark Andrews.
Yeah, it sounds like hedging from field.
Yeah, it does.
Little hedging.
Here I go again.
Look, I agree with you. I mean, it's the reason. Look, I have Andrews ahead. He outscored him last season, right? Travis Kelce, he's getting a little older. He had career low efficiency marks and target share. There was a lot of reasons to be a little concerned maybe about his ceiling compared to where he was a few years ago. Whereas Mark Andrews is coming off career highs across the board and was fantastic last season. He's 6 years younger. I'm just leaning toward him slightly. Also, Travis Kelce at times is going early in the second round. Mark Andrews at times you can get at the 2-3 turn. He's right. Going earlier, and that makes him a little more appealing. But that says more to your point about tiers, where if you have both guys in the same tier, Kelsey's off the board and you're staring at Andrews late in the round, you're fine with that. And vice versa, right? If someone decides they like Andrews and he goes early and Kelsey's sitting there at the 2-3 turn, I'm fine with that as well.
I've got Kelce at 19, Andrews at 21 on my big board. So, again, two slots apart in the overall big board. The biggest takeaway here is not which one of them do you prefer. It's that Travis Kelce, for a half decade, has had an undisputed run as being head and shoulders above every other tight end going into the season. Now that is not the case because Mark Andrews is just that good. And by the way, he got it done last year without Lamar Jackson for a good chunk of games. He did so during times in which Tyler Huntley was the starting quarterback, and Huntley seems to have a bright career in the NFL as maybe a journeyman type quarterback. But Lamar Jackson's the former unanimous MVP. He didn't have him for like half the season last year.
We get it. You despise Mark Andrews.
Yeah, we understand.
We get it.
Right. So who else? So it's Mark Andrews, DK Metcalf.
Yeah. Who else?
AJ Dillon, I think. Yeah, Derrick Henry, you were saying.
I was gonna say, when do we get to the Justin Herbert portion of the show? Yeah. I'll dive deep on that one. And then I just can't stand cannot stand the Saints defense this year. It's a joke. Joke.
Mike, is there
cut that, just that clip.
For you, Field mentioned this yesterday on the show. You weren't on the show, no big deal. But yesterday show, Field mentioned that there was a Mendoza line for him at certain positions. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, at the tight end position, dang it. And I want to know for you, at the tight end position, where is your Mendoza line? How far do you fall down to that middle tier tight end pack before you're like, I can't go past this and leave with a tight end one as my starter here?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, Pat Freiermuth is my 11th tight end, and I like him as a breakout player, but that's a back-end tight end, right? I think that, to answer your question, it's kind of the middle, right? It's that round six, round seven, where I'm looking at the guys you're seeing on the screen if you're watching the video broadcast here, Dalton Schultz, TJ Hockenson. Those are two guys I'm aiming for in every draft if I do not get Mark Andrews. Schultz has been fantastic. Hockenson, when he's been healthy, has been terrific. So I like both of those guys. That's what I'm looking at. That's pretty much my most popular range where I'm attacking that position.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly there, by the way. I think that Dalton Schultz was a guy that a year ago, obviously none of us were talking about, and during the season I would have said, wow, like, best year of his career. He should be motivated to get a franchise tag deal done when he was on the tag this past year. I think this could end up working out in Dalton Schultz's favor. I think he could have a better year this year than last year when he was already a top five fantasy tight end. Even if the weekly upside is not the same of the five guys ahead of him, he's going to be heavily targeted, especially early on in the year, because as of right now, I would argue he is two, maybe three on the Cowboys depth chart in terms of most likely to see targets in week one, with no Michael Gallup, James Washington being banged up, and question marks in terms of experience, like from guys like Noah Brown and Jalen Tolbert, who we just don't know about. Like, Schultz could have 10 targets against the Bucs in week one. Wouldn't surprise me a bit.
All right, Stefania, so if you don't get a tight end before you get to that point, last year tight ends 8 through 16 were separated by just 1.5 points per game. Is there a tight end that you like as a sleeper, someone late? You don't get one of those elite guys. Who is it that you're targeting?
I like Irv Smith, and I've been very vocal about him. I liked him last year going into the season until he didn't go into the season because he ended up with a meniscus injury that required repair. So that's a 4 to 6 month recovery. There was no way he was going to be able to play. He comes back. They haven't changed their plan to integrate him as a regular receiving tight end in that offense. And, you know, last year when our friend Courtney Cronin was covering the Vikings, she was talking about that increased pass catching role for Irv Smith. That remains the case. They have talked publicly about how much they like him as a receiver, but he injured his thumb during practice this year. It was an injury, just I think it was in a blocking situation. Not really a huge deal in terms of injury. Maybe could have played through it, but better that he got it fixed, actually. So even though he's not there right now, they think this will get him ready by week one. And then we know the thumb's not an issue, which is important if you're catching passes. So I think Irv Smith is going to have a year where we're going to, at the end of the season, look back and say, you know what? He was a great value. And he might have helped somebody win their fantasy league.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that call.
Like it.
I'll just name one more. Cole Kmet, just because right now the Bears pass catcher group, led by Darnell Mooney, and then a lot of question marks beyond that, had at least 5 targets in 11 of his 12 games last year. And Mike, positive regression, right?
There you go.
Zero touchdowns last year for Cole Kmet. Yes. He's bound to find the end zone a couple
definitely.
Of times.
By the way, mine is Pat Freiermuth, who had the 10th most fantasy points ever by a rookie tight end, but do you think he's mad at Cole Kmet for kind of stealing his thunder? You know, we'd be talking about Pat Freiermuth a lot more, but Cole Kmet came in there and had one of the best seasons ever. Poor Freiermuth got overshadowed a bit, but anyway, he's in for a nice season here.
15th round right now for Cole Kmet. 15th
That's
round
so
on
late.
Average.
That's late. All right, we're going to do one more sponsorship, and then we got your YouTube questions that we're coming to you with. Right now, summer is all about outdoor cookouts, backyard get-togethers, and of course, fantasy football drafts, and all that means plenty of Miller time.
Yeah.
And with just 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12-ounce serving, it's the perfect light beer to sip on all summer long and all draft long. It's been proven over time that with the Miller Lite in your hand, your drafting ability improves. And who doesn't want that?
I don't know.
In a world of endless scrolling through delivery options, you know what you're getting when you get Miller Lite. It's beer with a great taste and only 96 calories. Miller Lite is brewed to taste like the way that beer lovers want. Because Miller Lite is for those who actually want to taste their beer. This summer, have more fun with Beer Lovers Light Beer and great tasting Miller Lite. There's nothing like the first sip of an ice cold beer on a hot summer day, no matter where you are. So whenever it's Miller time for you, be it by a fire pit, poolside with Miller Lite Mike, or at a dive bar, make sure you grab a Miller Lite and make the most of it. The next time you're getting ready to enjoy cold ones with your crew, go to MillerLite.com/FFF to find the delivery options near you. Or you can pick up some Miller Lite pretty much anywhere they sell beer. It's Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces.
Boom.
Football fans, join the next generation of fantasy football with Rainmakers Football, that first ever NFT fantasy game from DraftKings. It's the only NFT fantasy game licensed by the NFLPA. Now you can play all season for millions in prizes by building the ultimate NFT franchise. Right now, everyone can get their first full roster starter pack for free. Playing Rainmakers is simple. Buy, sell, bid, and win player card NFTs of the biggest names in the game through regular drops and auctions on DraftKings Marketplace. Craft lineups of athletes from your NFT collection and earn points for touchdowns, receptions, and more, just like daily fantasy football. Build your NFT franchise and enter free Rainmakers football contests all season long to compete for millions in prizes. The next generation of fantasy sports is here. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app now, sign up with promo code FFF, click the Rainmakers tile, and opt in to get your first card free. Plus, play for millions in prizes all football season while building the ultimate NFT fantasy franchise with Rainmakers Football. That's promo code FFF. Build, play, win only at DraftKings. Contest entries dependent on type and number of NFTs held. Eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com for results.
That was like a 98 out of 100. If it wasn't for that one slip up, Stephon, you crushed it. You
still an 8 plus,
though. A lot of big words in there.
Harsh grader. You did the best out of all of us for live reads.
That's true.
What else is new?
I got to say that. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to do some YouTube questions here. We have a whole bunch. Please jump in our YouTube chat. Ask us more questions if you have some all season long. First one comes from Johnny Lechner, wants to know, what player has moved up your rankings the most in the last 2 weeks? Is there a player that has
I would think Travis Etienne is probably in that conversation for me. And the thing is that when you're – it's not that he has moved up a ton in the running back rankings. It's just that if you move up four slots from RB23 to RB19, that's a pretty significant jump. If you move from wide receiver 67 to wide receiver 63, less so, he comes to mind for me. And then I would say, like, probably pending health. Kenneth Walker could be a player that will move up a little bit. That means pending the health of Rashad Penny. Those would be a couple names that come to mind right now. But no, there's nobody that's, like, totally leapfrogged, is there?
Yeah, not major movers. I mean, actually, James Robinson, I guess, has gone up a little bit. He should get more confident he's going to play early in the season. But that kind of goes counter to what you're saying about ETN. I'm feeling a little more concerned about him. And maybe, I don't want to say dropping him substantially, but maybe a little bit, right?
His ADP is really concerned? Just because James Robinson.
Because he's going to handle a lot of the carries.
I was encouraged by, and again, you got to be careful with preseason and what you see during games. I was encouraged by the reps that Travis Etienne got and who he got them with. Obviously, Robinson not playing in game action right now. But I just, sometimes I have to remind myself just like special talent. Right, and Travis Etienne coming out of Clemson was regarded as a truly special talent and an awesome pass catcher. And if we're looking at opportunity reports right now for fantasy football, it's just so hard to overstate just how valuable targets are in fantasy. Mm-hmm. And if Etienne pushes for somewhere between 5 or 6 a game, that could lead to true RB2 status.
Yeah, I think that's completely doable. And based on, I was at Jacksonville, he is heavily involved in that offense as a pass catcher, as much, if not more so, even than the direct runs.
Mike, have you ever studied this? I do have. I just want to make sure there's nothing more recent. Have you ever calculated, like, the value of a target vis-a-vis a carry in fantasy? I have a...
I don't know what it is off the top of my head. It's certainly more, though.
Okay, good. Yeah. So our buddy Scott Barrett, who's now at Fantasy Points, at the time was working for PFF in 2018. So the data is a little bit outdated, but I think the idea probably still holds.
It'll be the same ballpark, right? Yeah.
This is the source here, Scott Barrett, the PFF article back in 2018. For running backs, over the past 10 seasons, a target has been worth 2.74 times as much as a carry in PPR leagues. So that's why Mike has been consistent in talking about Nick Chubb, who I think averaged 1.3 targets or 1.8 targets
5%
last
target
year.
Share with Kareem Hunt.
He is unquestionably a better running back than he is in terms of where his running back ranking is. He's one of the 5 best runners, pure runners in the NFL. If you're getting 1.3 targets, far inferior players are getting five targets per game, it makes that difference between those two players in terms of rankings much narrower.
Yeah, and by the way, I'll throw in Damian Pierce to answer the question.
Sure.
Just looks good. Yes. Could be the number one in Houston this year, and guy could catch it. He could run it. A lot to like. He's been moving up a little bit.
All right, Jerron Walker wants to know, would you consider trading your first round pick for a second and third rounder? So let's say you have the fourth, and you want to trade someone who has picked 10 or 11 necessarily at the turn for their second and third. Would you trade your first rounder in order to get value in the second and third?
Wait, so from 4 to 11 and get a third?
You would trade from 4, and you're trading with the guy who has 10 or the manager who has 10 or 11, but that 10 or 11 is in the second and third turn. So you're trading 4 for 20.
There's a lot going on.
If I can get
a second and a third for a mid first, then yes.
I'm going to say if I have a top 4 pick, I'm just not trading it. I'm getting one of the top 4 players in fantasy for me. I'm not going to trade it for
I'd probably entertain it. You know, it's very subjective. It's like one of the specific terms certainly, but I don't hate the idea in principle. Again, I talked about this a little bit on yesterday's show. It's good to identify how many players you believe are truly elite. Set it and forget it, regardless of position in fantasy this year. And if you think the number is 25 and you'd rather have 5 of them as opposed to 3 or 4 of them, then it might be a worthwhile trade.
So let's do one more question. This one comes from Rye Drive. Lily wants to know, I need to keep one.
Okay. Oh, okay. I like these.
Saquon Barkley. Sorry.
I've heard of him.
Jalen Waddle and Kyler Murray. I'm already keeping Jonathan Taylor and CeeDee Lamb. So keeping Jonathan Taylor and CeeDee Lamb, running back, wide receiver, they've got Barkley, Waddle, and Kyler. Which one of those are the three are you keeping?
Let's go process of elimination.
Yeah, Kyler's out.
Kyler's out. Yeah, that's my first.
Yeah, just because quarterbacks, there's better depth, and you could find a guy that's awesome in the 9th or 10th round. It's between Jalen Waddle
and Saquon Barkley.
I'm going to lean towards Jalen Waddle. And I know that is one that probably, this is a close one, though, right? Yeah. Like, this is one where if we were doing tiers to bring this all the way back full circle, they'd probably be in a comparable tier of players. 55% of my brain says Jalen Waddle. 45% of my brain says Saquon Barkley. I think the floor for Jalen Waddle is quite a bit higher than Saquon Barkley, but the position that Saquon Barkley plays is more valuable than Jalen Waddle. If Saquon returns investment this year, you've got two top 15 running backs locked up.
I'm legally not allowed to comment on Saquon Barkley until Stefania speaks first, so go ahead.
What a difference a year makes. I would lean towards Saquon Barkley because of that positional edge. I think that's, to me, what he's going to do. There's not much depth behind him. He is 1,000 times better than he was heading into last year. Saquon.
And the opportunity for, I just was talking about it, even though, again, 55% Jalen Waddle, the opportunity for 5 or 6 targets a game for Saquon Barkley, extremely real. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Waddle kind of, with Tyreek Hill, they're going to cap out, especially since he's not used near the goal line a lot of short area targets, probably caps out as a borderline wide receiver one. To your point, Saquon Barkley is a massive upside, right? So I'm going Barkley.
Saquon's ADP is 30 right now. Jalen Waddle is 37. So you're getting them right around that same area with each other.
Yep.
So
around that same tier.
Right on that same tier, some might say. That's going to do it for us today for Fantasy Focus Football. But please know, we have so much more fantasy content throughout today. ESPN 1, 7 to 10 p.m., we are doing a live draft. It's going to be a ton of fun.
Damian Woody has pick one. Who will it be?
Ooh, who's it going to be?
Who will it be?
For Field, Stefania, Mike. My name is Daniel. We'll see you guys at 7 tonight.
Daniel's taking, Damian's taking Quentin Nelson first over.
Oh, yeah. I know that.
Or Trent Williams. He's decided between those two right now.
All right, so I'm on the clock then.
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of options.
What are your thoughts on Tim Kennedy right now in PPR league, Daniel?
I don't dislike Tim Kennedy.
I don't know. Should I take him? Should I take him?
Definitely. I actually think Tim has a block.
He leads the NFL.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady out there hustling for us.
with advice that we really trust. Bay Area lady, always there to help. She's not a cone, she's your favorite gal. She's to find your best.